So we'll get to some open line calls. But first, let's do this. Captain Kelly Sweeney is handing by with a couple of news updates and some stories that came out earlier this week that we just know you'll find interesting. And then we'll get to open line. So we'll go ahead and grab a line now. And I promise we'll get to you right away. Coming up next on Coast to Coast, this is Ian Punnett. Okay, so we'll line up some open line calls between now and the rest of this hour on Coast to Coast. And our friend Captain Kelly Sweeney joins us here on Coast to Coast with a quick update on a couple of stories. But let me just say, first of all, hope you're doing well this holiday season and you've got all your Christmas shopping done.
Ahoy, Ian, to you and all the Coast listeners. And no, we haven't got all our Christmas shopping done yet, but we're working on it.
Okay. Well, still time to get that extra Saturday on Christmas Eve for those stores that will be open. We'll get two what they call Super Saturdays, I think, this year. So we had a couple stories I thought were very interesting. You had sent me a story earlier in the week about a new ship. I want to talk about that. But first, you've also heard, and I guess this is something which you could better explain anyway, because of the trade winds or of the currents, that are the very first debris from the Japanese tsunami has made it to our shores, or is it just the first radioactive debris has made it all the way to the United States?
Well, no, the first debris. Now, you and I had talked about that some months ago, and I gave all the Coast listeners a heads up about that. And over here on the coast of Washington, about 2 weeks ago, the first stuff from the tsunami in Japan started washing up on the beaches. And I expect that, you know, to continue more and more heavy duty as time goes on.
Typically, what is it? What's in it?
Well, right now, it appears to me that it looks like fenders, floating hard plastic or rubber bumpers that ships and boats come up against.
Hmm.
It looks like the stuff that was in the port has come out first, and that's what's washing up. And you're going to get floating debris coming across. The lightest stuff obviously is going to come over first because, you know, the winds and the currents are going to affect that more. But the bigger stuff, I think, will be coming down the road. But they, I saw a picture of an oceanographer out in the by Port Angeles that had was next to what we call a Yokohama fender that had floated and washed up on the shore about 2 weeks ago.
And are you using fender differently than we would if we were, say, talking about our cars?
Yeah, it's a nautical term, and I'm sorry, but it's they're large rubber floats. And, you know, like what boaters have, those small orange ones that they put against the dock?
Sure.
These are the ship-size versions.
Okay.
Have tires on them, and you are put up, lined up alongside a dock, so when ships come alongside, they don't wipe out the dock or put dents in the dock
sure.
each time.
Right.
That's
okay.
What's coming over first, and that's what washed up first over here on the coast.
All right. And who owns it?
Well, the person who finds it, I guess.
I mean, in maritime law, if it passes over and it's been dislodged and it floats, is anybody under any obligation to try to send it back to that port in Japan, or
if it washes up, it washes up. There was a number of years ago they had a bunch of Nikes in a container that washed up on the and a cargo container that had washed overboard on a cargo ship in a big storm in the Pacific, and the container partially broke open, and Nike tennis shoes started washing up on the beaches, and it's like, well, hey, you know. You find the shoes, they're yours.
They're yours. And then, but so far, then, no word about any of the radioactive fallout anything might have been contaminated while during
of the flotsam that has come across the Pacific. Now, there have been ships that have had radioactivity, positive radioactivity tests, cargo ships that have come in, radioactive dust in their vents, and some containers that had radioactivity of ships that had passed through the Fukushima area. But As far as the stuff that had come across the ocean, as far as I know, nothing has been radioactive yet.
Okay, and then you sent me the story about this new ship from Korea. Is that where they're testing the new icebreaker?
Yes, but that is part of a bigger story that I wanted to pass on to you and the Coast listeners tonight about what's going on up north. And and I'd like to weave that in a little bit, Ian, but there's a noise that I'm hearing in maritime circles from up north that is really, I would call, saber-rattling. And there's a military buildup going on right now in Russia and in Canada over the Arctic, and it's happening right now. And this new ship, this cargo ship that Hyundai Heavy Industries, which is a large shipyard in South Korea, is doing for the Canadians, is part of that. But I'd like to talk a little bit about the what I hear and what I see going on up north.
Okay. We've got a lot of people
might not be aware of.
Okay. Well, and we got a lot of people hanging on for open lines, so I'm just be mindful of that. But so we've talked about a little bit already in the past about how Russia is making claims for the North Pole and for the drilling rights and for the mining rights, and even into areas that they can't seem to justify.
Yes, that's exactly right. And the Russians are making their move. Vladimir Putin announced that they're going to deploy two brigades of specially trained troops in the Arctic to defend their claim. And they're going to be establishing a series of submarine bases along the Northern Sea Route above Russia to defend their sovereignty. Now, Russia has 75 ice-breaking vessels, which are used for a variety of purposes, including military operations. Of those 75, 16 of them are heavy-duty polar icebreakers, and Russia is now going to build 6 new ones in the next 2 years. On the other side, what I see is Canada coming up. The Canadian military recently had a month-long exercise in the Arctic called Operation Nanook. Over 1,000 troops conducted Arctic maneuvers that were focused on defending Canada's claims up there. And Canada has also announced that they intend to build a number of bases along their Northwest Passage. Now, Canada has 19 icebreakers, 6 of which are heavy-duty polar class. But Prime Minister Harper's government has already allocated $25 billion to build 8 ice-class warships to defend their claims. Things are really heating up there.
Sure.
There's a Russian plan to annex 380,000 square miles of the Arctic Sea that's now international waters. They're going to make the claim in a matter of months that it's theirs. And part of this military buildup up there is to defend what they say is their claim. Now, the Canadians have a dispute with the U.S. on 8,000 square miles of the Beaufort Sea in the northern part of the northern coast of Alaska that has oil and gas in abundance up there. And so there's a lot happening, and, you know, we're being left out. We have no plans to develop a deep-water military base in the north to protect our claims. We only have one icebreaker, okay? The Russians have 16 heavy-duty polar ones. The Canadians, 6. We have one that is a light-duty icebreaker that can work up there, and that's it. The two heavy-duty ones that we used to have are both undergoing maintenance down in Seattle, Polar Sea and the Polar Star. They're not even going to be available for like 7 years, if ever. And so right now Congress is not allocating money for the ships or the bases, and I foresee things are really going to be heating up in the Arctic, because as this ice is retreating on a regular and more consistent basis and opening up the shipping lanes, I mean, there was an 800% increase in shipping along the Northern Sea Route this year, and things are really moving. And if we don't get together as a country, if our elected officials don't start realizing the seriousness of this, we're going to lose out, because there's a vast amount of oil up there, a huge amount of natural gas. Maybe one-third of the world's natural gas reserves are available up there. And, of course, as we've talked about, gold and diamonds on the seafloor.
Right. a story to watch for 2012. If we don't speak, have a very Merry Christmas.
You too, my friend. As you know, we've been talking about maritime issues for over 6 years, and I want you to know how much I've enjoyed you as a host and the Coast listeners, and I wish all of you Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, my friend, and smooth sailing until we talk again.
And to you, and thank you so much, Captain Kelly Sweeney. In fact, Captain Kelly, thank you so much for being on. We had a, I think it was back in 2006. I think it was the very first time maybe that he was on the early show on Saturday nights called Coast to Coast Live. I'd even forgotten that I had done that for a while, but it was part of the history of Coast to Coast, and glad to be a part of the team in any way possible. All right, so open lines for the rest of this hour. Where do you want to take us? Let's start with Mike in Ithaca, New York, east of the Rockies on Coast to Coast. Mike?
Hi, Ian.
Hey.
Good morning. What I would like to talk about is really would have been better in the last hour, but the guest is gone. But I guess it's someone called in about Jesus healing himself, and it sort of brings up the question, why didn't Jesus or the Father prevent the whole crucifixion and all this? And I believe what the reason for this is the drama had to play out as it did to convince people that they could be forgiven of original sin and of their sins.
So that's definitely the traditional theological belief. Yeah, that's pretty much right. In the,
it could have been an alternative, but it would have been just as horrible and just as gory, and so it was left the way it was.
Yeah, you may in fact be right, and there are some people that claim, of course, that it wasn't that that it was exaggerated, or that there were other aspects to the story that are left out, which would contextualize it differently. But that is the absolute mainstream belief on why it happened. Dan, a first-time caller line in Fairbanks, Alaska. On Coast to Coast. Dan?
Hi, Ian. How you doing?
Good. Open lines. Where do you want to take us?
I would like to announce the return of King Leo in July. It sounds insane, but this is what your guests have been trying to talk about this for the last 4 days. Starting to piss me off. And it's going to be a great thing. It's not something that's going to be... everyone in the world will see this. The first thing that's going to happen...
In 4 days?
2 days before Glenn Beck's Love Fest, King Leo's soul ship will, believe it or not, do a flyby around the world. Everyone will see it, and then he will remove all the demons from hell, believe it or not, because the only reason they're down there is because they cannot handle the power of our sun. That's for human beings and for King Leo's, which we'll get into later.
Okay, well, I don't know how much later, but tell me, I mean, you're talking about King Leo. Is this the guy that's tied into the reptilian story?
No, that's Pindar. That is who King Leo is out. He's already, I've got, the whole story is on King Leo's Facebook site, and it's easier to write.
Okay, well, then I'm lost. So who's King Leo?
He is the Galactic King.
Okay, and where does King Leo reside?
It's been 5,000 years for us. It's only been about a month for him.
Okay, but where does he reside?
He is in his sunship, and it's in a battle armada, and
okay,
it is approaching Earth.
Okay.
And we all see it.
Okay. And so King Leo in this sunship is going to do what in 4 days?
No, in July.
Oh, in July. I thought you said
yeah,
4 days.
Glenn Beck's going to have a little love fest. He rented a stadium in Texas, and I figured that would be as good a time as anything for the return of him. So 2 days before that, all these events will happen.
Okay, and you're basing this... The event is going to be marked by a Glenn Beck concert kind of thing?
Well, it's a long story. Really, really, really long story.
Okay. why is Glenn Beck the central figure in the return of King Leo?
Because King Leo craves love, humor, and affection. And the more love force that Glenn Beck can generate, that's what's bringing him. Well, I figure that would be a good way to return. So it'd be the return of the king thing. It'll be great.
Okay, and so King Leo hasn't...
It'll be the biggest celebration in 5,000 years the solar system has seen. And I've already got people on it.
Okay, well, I'm sure you do. But tell me why... I mean, if this was so big, what happens if Glenn Beck cancels the appearance?
Doesn't matter.
It won't matter?
No.
Okay, all right.
2 days before that, It's a really long story, and I'm sure there's other people who would like to get on, but I just want people to hear King Leo's name, think about it, and the lions on the top of the ark.
Okay.
Think about that.
Lions on the top of the ark. Like the sun sign, Leo, I believe he's referring to. All right, Peter is in Cambridge, Massachusetts, open lines on Coast to Coast. Peter?
Eon, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, I'm going to say things, and you don't have to. I'm going to ask questions, but you don't have to answer them. I'll answer them. What's the purpose of the Bible? The purpose of the Bible is to see who buys the bull. There are things in the Bible that are never, truths in the Bible never spoken about. Quote, consider your enemy may be my friend. If the Creator is saying that you should not destroy your enemy, but you should see its depth meaning. The prophecies of Russia and China attacking other nations has long ago been predicted in the Billy Meyer writings. Now I'm going to tell everyone how to escape all the junk, which is we're going to shift into another reality, and we're going to do that by knowing that everything is made of primal energy. So okay. The way to reduce all these problems that we have is to just breathe, think about what you want, breathe through the mouth, and think about what you want until you feel calm, and you will bit by bit shift yourself out of this hell that we're in, and all those who are in it will die in it, and have a good night.
Where are you on the King Leo returning for a Glenn Beck show?
I'm all for it if it happens, if it's a happy thing, you know what I mean? But King Leo is not the most important thing in my life. The most important thing in my life is the Creator and me, okay? People got to get out of thinking about authorities. The greatest power that they have is put in you from the Creator. That's greater than anything, okay? So forget about kings and this and that. Pay attention to wisdom and your own glorious self. That's it.
Okay. Thank you. Billy is in Big Sur on Coast to Coast. Open lines. Billy, if you've been listening, you know it is totally open lines. So wherever you want to go, go.
Yes, sir. I just wanted to comment about the whole, the flotsam. The flotsam from the Japanese tsunami has kind of been washing up anywhere between Ragged Point and down where I live here in Morro Bay. It's been unreal, man. Like, you know, Japanese fishing floats, you know, shrapnel. You cannot believe the stuff that that has been washing up on our beaches here as far as that whole disaster goes. And of course there's the whole, you know, a giant island of it that's going to probably be hitting Hawaii and stuff. And it's starting to happen. And what really trips me out is that we're not even in an active weather pattern at all. It's just we got an omega high split jet stream, but stuff is it's coming into our shores here in California on the Central Coast at an alarming rate, really.
Okay.
Quite frankly. And
appreciate the heads up on that. And then we'll continue to monitor that here on Coast to Coast, especially the radioactive debris, which I think many people are very, very worried about. Rightfully so. So we'll give you the numbers again coming up in just a second. We've cleared out a bunch of lines, so you'll be able to, if you call right now, you'll be able to grab some. And then we'll get a half hour more of open lines. And you can pick your topic. It could be on any of the ones we presented tonight or, as you have heard, any of the ones that you are thinking about yourself as we are a week away from the holidays. I'll be on Christmas Eve going into Christmas morning and New Year's Eve going into New Year's Day, as well as the first prediction show of the year coming up the day before New Year's Eve on Coast to Coast. And my book, by the way, remember, Jacula the Vampire Dog, handy, great, last-second Christmas present for the right kid. Find out more online. Wait, we're not done yet. You're coming up next. Hang on. So going into our last half hour, open lines, we'll get an open line for you. We can do it. Take your time and give us your best shot. Give us your best point up front, too. Some people like to try to orchestrate a rather longer piece by saying, here's my first of three things. And we don't really have time to get everybody's third point on. So give us your best point first, just in case, and we'll get to you coming up in just a second. And I do look forward to staying in touch with you throughout the week at Deacon Punnett. If you've got a Twitter account or you want to start one, include me and the people that you're going to be following, and I'll write back if you tweet and find out more if you go to twitter.com. But it's at Deacon, D-E-A-C-O-N, Punnett, P-U-N-N-E-T-T. If you missed any of the previous hours of the show, great to go be a Coast Insider. Inexpensive and gives you tons of flexibility, especially heading into this busy holiday season. You can listen to Coast anytime you want, as well as participate in all the other fun stuff that the privilege of being a Coast Insider gives you. Find out more at our website, coasttocoastam.com, where you can also find the numbers to join us for open lines coming up next on Coast to Coast. All right, let's just pick it up where we left it off. Let's go get Michael in Albany, open lines on Coast to Coast. Michael?
Yes. Deacon?
Yes, sir.
I come from a religious background, Methodist missionaries, Methodist ministers, so on. Myself, I'm into holistic healing. And I found early in life that I could see things that other people only now are coming to the forefront with. Well, for example, once in Queens, New York, during the storm, there was a lot of shadow people, and I saw four seraphim, you know, those that have a sword straight up, and they wear this lime-colored outfit like a dress, you would wear at a communion, and they have the little short wings that don't flap. And they took position at four corners of my apartment building. Then there was another time when some people saw one in back of me while I drive my taxi that looked like it was holding me in its wings. That was the other type of angel that we normally see in pictures. And then there was the third kind, which I woke up the day that they had the stellarium of planets in Capricorn back in the early 90s or so. The temperature went down to zero all over New York's area down by the coast. And that time I woke up, you know, it was like in a grassy area, like a park. And there was these one that was like a little Jewish fella, and he was looking into my left eye. And then there was another one that was coming down that looked kind of like the fella that played in that movie where they have a robot that's protecting him, and he's on a flying saucer. But in this case, he was a wing one that came down with, and he was wearing that white short Greek-like.
I accept that these happen a lot for you. What do you learn from them?
In my opinion, that we have counsel all the time. Number one, the through the spirit of universal light or the soul, and also through the giver of direction that's assigned to protect us. It's an awareness that is present from the time we're born through the time we depart. And perhaps beyond.
Well, very, very interesting. I appreciate that. Thanks for sharing that and your visions. Stephen is in Kansas City, Missouri, open lines, trying to get everybody in before the top of the hour. Stephen?
Yes. Good morning, Deacon Punnett.
Morning. Open lines.
Yes. a lot of heavy stuff on tonight. I kind of wanted to lighten things up a little bit and tell you that when I found out that you were a fellow Misty, my appreciation for you grew 100-fold. I wanted to kind of reminisce about a certain episode that was that they did a spoof on a movie called Rocket Ship X to the Moon, I believe it was. It starred Lloyd Bridges, and of course he was of Sea Hunt fame.
Yeah, man, I remember I saw this movie years ago.
Yeah, and when they first panned to him, you know, that he's at a cocktail party or something like that and talking with some other people. And one of the robots says, by this time my lungs were aching for air, which was something that he said on just about every episode of Sea Hunt. And that show just used to make me giggle uncontrollably. You know, I really loved it, and I was glad to hear that you were a fellow enjoyer of the show.
Yeah, I was. In fact, I always found it interesting, and thank you, Stephen. I always found it interesting that in Sea Hunt, you know, Lloyd Bridges found a way to stay home, which is really so much of the early inspiration for that. It was good work. It was decent paying, but the hours were going to be normal, and he was going to be home, and he had young boys. And obviously, we know that he was considered a very good father to the rest of the Bridges acting clan, and that the family doesn't really have the history of the problems that so many other acting families do, and partly because I think of what Lloyd Bridges did by acting. Now, that's just how I understand the story. I don't have any I actually once asked Bo Bridges about it, and I was doing an interview with him, and he said that, yeah, he goes, you know, dad was home. He said, I think it was also work, and you got to take work where you can get it. And he didn't think Sea Hunt was going to last that long. And it continued to, you know, break the mold for what syndicated product was going to be like. John is in Atlanta, east of the Rockies on Coast to Coast. John?
Yes, how you doing, sir? Ian?
Good. Nice to hear from somebody from the ATL.
It's good to be on tonight and to the Coast. This is, again, it's another good show. I want to speak about the previous guest. In terms of the Paleo-Hebrew, I think what we're going to find out by looking at the ancient text, Ian, is that some of the discrepancies with the transliteration, specifically of the names that people refer to in terms of Jesus, they're going to find out that in the Paleo-Hebrew, the name was Yahushua, and that the father's name was Yahuwah, and that the names themselves, when we look at word etymology, there is no J's in Hebrew.
Of course not.
There are no J's in Greek. So it makes it impossible for the son's name to have been Jesus.
Of course.
And we have a language that did not exist at the time of his birth.
Of course.
We're speaking about J itself not being a part of the English language.
Right.
About 1540. So it would have been impossible with the Christ child being born 2,000 years ago. The angel Gabriel comes to Miriam.
Right. I'm not sure I understand the point. I think this is all pretty well accepted that we're not, that he wasn't actually called Jesus in his lifetime.
Correct.
Right.
The thing, I guess, Ian, is that through history and time, the point is that we have doctrines, we have belief systems in our day and time which don't pan out historically. And that was the reference that I'm making in terms of the previous guest having information, which I think is going to be extremely important in today as we merge into 2012 with the heightened awareness, which it appears that the consciousness of men is starting to awaken, and that we will revert back to things which were based on truth versus belief systems or religious or rituals.
All right. Well, I'll be anxious to see that's true a year from now, and in fact, many people would agree that it would be nice to go back for the important things. And to go forward and not get hung up on the past, if in going forward there is progress and there is more peace. Russell is in Salt Lake City on Coast to Coast. We're running out of time, Russell, before we get to the top of the hour, trying to get in a few more people. But you had an open line?
Yes. This is Russ. I was listening to your previous speaker about the metal plates.
Sure. Metal books, but yeah.
Metal books or something like that, yeah. I just want to say if there's any, I don't know, anybody knows if there's anybody from BYU or anybody of interest in this, because, as you know, I'm LDS, and I'm sure a lot of LDS people and Mormon haters out there probably rolling their eyes, but just the similarity, I think, to this in the description of the metal plates. Joseph Smith, who's, you know, one of the founders of our church, translated the Book of Mormon from.
But those are plates, and they were gold, right?
Yeah.
And weren't they? You could only see them if you were a true believer, I thought. That was the hallmark of whether or not you were a true believer, is that you saw them, as opposed to just being able to hold these in your hand.
Exactly, yeah. You know, it's all based on faith. I mean, just the similarities. I mean,
But the claim here is that it's not based on faith,
by rings, and they're perfectly sealed. I mean, that's very similar. I mean,
except that here, even non-believers can see them and feel them in the case of these codices.
Yeah. I know this is still based on faith. I mean, as far as the Book of Mormon and all that, but I just wonder if anybody's, you know, brought something up about it or I mean,
I think it would be easier to make that comparison. It would be easier to make that comparison if at any place anybody could look at those original plates. If anybody could just take them and hold them, and that would be the kind of comparison we're talking about here, you know, that these are ones which can be examined and will be examined by critics and by fans alike. And if, you know, if the church, the Latter-day Saints church hierarchy, were willing to do that with, you know, these plates from the origin of the LDS church, I think that would be interesting. I've been told, I believe, that they no longer exist on this plane. But if they do, or if they discover them, I think that would be the interesting thing, to always put them up in front of people who are skeptics as opposed to people who are believers. Adam is in Oklahoma on Coast to Coast. Adam?
Hello, Ian. How are you doing?
Doing all right. Open lines.
Okay. Here in the last, 6 months or so, I've been getting ads on the radio and on our local television stations of people. They're wanting people to go on to this site called Red Dirt Ready, Oklahoma, and register if you're ex-military, ex-police officer, or law enforcement of some type, and medical personnel. Now, this come out right after the NASA head went and emailed his employees, and I was just wondering, get your take on why and if there's any other states doing that, trying to get officials of one sort or another to register. I'm sure because if something breaks off, they're not going to have, you know, the law enforcement they're going to need. They're not going to have the doctors or, you know, medical personnel. And just take on what you thought about that.
Well, I only know what I've seen on the, you know, on the website, and for people, your phone's breaking up a little bit, so I'll just say thank you. That it says here, Red Dirt Ready is an emergency preparedness initiative supported by this website, reddirtready.com, a user-friendly site featuring helpful information in the areas of personal preparedness, volunteerism, youth education, and neighborhood security. You know, I think that's interesting. Why Red Dirt Ready? The phrase is a tribute to the enduring spirit of Oklahomans to pull together and face adversity head on. Red Dirt is a geographic icon and serves as a symbol of our resilience and willingness to support each other in challenging times. Sounds like a good plan. I'm all about preparedness, and they could even break it down neighborhood by neighborhood to make connections like that. So, yeah, what does it mean? What are they preparing us for? I don't know. But maybe it's just as simple as, you know, tornadoes. And we all know that's important in Oklahoma. Daryl is in Dayton, Ohio, wildcard line on Coast to Coast. Daryl?
Great show tonight. I'd like to get back to the Book of Daniel where he was talking about earlier, opening up books in the later days when knowledge increased. And I'd like to introduce Bible codes. I studied Bible codes a little bit, where the actual text was every other letter, every hundredth letter, and like the word Timothy McVeigh and Oklahoma City bombing, would come up in a close area, which shows intelligence. It shows God knew what was going to go on. But until we had computers, these things weren't going to be able to be found as readily as today. And I don't believe Bible codes are for the predicting the future, only showing us what is currently happening. I'd like his opinion on that.
Well, I have it. I still have my copy of the book. I read it from time to time. I think there are problems for it for Hebrew scholars, you know, that because there's no vowels in Hebrew, as you know. So we're just dealing in consonants. And that means you can kind of link up a lot of consonants to form different words. However, you know what? I can't get rid of my copy of that book. Every time I pick it up and read it, it fascinates me all over again, even though deep down inside, I think there's a bunch of problems with it. It really is great read. So, yeah, I'm with you on the sense that I'd like to think that it's that it says that and very clearly. I'm tempted to believe that. I just there's something about it still that makes me question whether we're just reading, you know, we're looking at locomotives and clouds, but. That having been said, Bible code, if you've never read it, never looked into it, you know, it's definitely worth an afternoon. Kenzie is in Toronto in the time that we have left on Coast to Coast. Kenzie?
Hi there. This is my first time ever calling into a radio station, actually.
Yay!
And it's neat because you've kind of indirectly pointed at a few of the points I wanted to make in that you mentioned earlier that Jesus Christ actually went by another name.
Sure.
And, most of my knowledge comes from videos that I rent from the library. And The one that's of interest, he goes by Esau. And we were speaking of the crucifixions before. And when I think of Jesus being crucified, my mind goes to about 6,000 other people who, around the same time, all the roads led to Rome, but they were lined with people on crucifixes dying in agony. And just the noise that must have made. And fortunately for Jesus, because before he appears in the Bible, he was out east where he learned his trance-like meditations. And, you know, he was able to revive himself after his ordeal on the cross. And like the intelligence that he possessed, he got out of there and went back east. And this documentary I saw, and the reason I mention this is that there is a tomb, like a shrined tomb, where he was laid to rest as Esau. And it's within half an hour of a border, this is in Pakistan, within half an hour of a border that no journalists, people can get into because the international community has deemed it unsafe, like an unsafe, untouchable kind of war zone parameter. And so the documentary ends, you know, they've interviewed plenty of people that have seen this tomb, but can't get in there themselves. And so this was even a VHS.
Okay. Well, that's time prevents a response, unfortunately, because we're just out of time. But I think people will, I'm sure, be motivated to can learn more about that. And it just goes to show you that the subject to me is not just limited to me, but endlessly fascinating, and that many of you feel the same way. So nice to sort of spend some time with that before the actual Christmas holiday next week, and we'll be here with you. Hope you get your shopping done. Get ready for Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol. That's also fun. Good to take a break from all that shopping, if that pertains to you. Otherwise, happy Hanukkah, whatever else you're celebrating this holiday season. Deus te amat, and I do too. Talk to you next week.